Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 30.
It's a good episode to be.
It is. It's 30 of them. It feels like that's a sizable number.
That's a chunk. That's a chunk of stuff.
A chunk of things.
Yes.
Of sods.
A chunk of sods, yes.
A chunk of sods.
This is good lingo. It's very descriptive.
Hear that, handsomeites? Chunk of sods.
Just get in such a hurry that you can't say episode.
I know. It is a really long word. There's no reason to slow everything down with words like episode.
Oh, good lord.
Oh, goodness.
You ready to talk about things, or this is actually pretty slow dicking around? we need to liven this up.
I don't know. I'm still tired from yelling at Christmas lights.
And eating 10 pounds of turkey.
Yeah, exactly. I had turkey for breakfast.
I cooked a roast last night. The roast that I was going to make for you. And well, I've eaten all of it today.
Jesus Christ. That's a lot of roast.
It's not like it was 9 pounds. It was just, I don't know how much it was. It didn't seem like it was that much. And to be fair, there is some left. And it had a huge bone in it.
But don't you eat the bone?
Only sometimes.
Only sometimes.
Yeah.
You're like a dog just gnawing it.
Yes. I do make those noises. That's about how I do.
Yes, Eric and I shared Thanksgiving. We had a shared Thanksgiving.
Yes. You're going to tell them what the clever name you came up for it was?
Friendsgiving.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that clever. There's other people who do the same thing.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
But
we didn't want to travel very, very far distances.
And I apparently did.
And Eric did. Actually, we would have traveled even further, probably.
Mm-hmm. I would have, I mean, I to visit my family, I would have traveled 3 times as far as I did to see you.
That's very true. But we had a Friendsgiving. We got Eric to play a board game, kind of.
Well, it wasn't really a board game.
Card game. It is a game that you play that is not like a video game. Mm-hmm. So, success!
I killed myself afterwards.
And we did karaoke.
We did do that. That was my reward.
Eric put up with us gaming with him for 2 hours. So we went and karaoke'd.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's how you get, like, learned behavior. That's how you
yes.
You reward it. Here, have a treat.
It's like Pavlov's dog.
Exactly.
You'll ring a bell and I'll sing Under Pressure to you.
Under Pressure. Boom, 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 boom.
Yep.
That's how it goes.
Check out the beat while the DJ revolves it.
Oh my God. That's so terrible.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Really
Vanilla
bad.
Ice is complete dog shit. The whole world agrees with this.
I don't know if there's anyone who does disagree with that.
Vanilla Ice's mom is like, that song sucks.
Probably. I also would like to take this occasion to announce that we are giving away the hardcover of Hawkeye, recently released. has issues 1 through 11, plus Young Avengers number 5 or 6, and I think the annual as well in it, but it's our, like, Christmas giveaway.
I'd call it our Thanksgiving present. Doesn't your family do that?
No.
No?
No. I mean, it goes till Christmas, so it's a Christmas. I don't know. But anyway, you can, I will link to that in the show notes. It's a little handy widget that lets you enter and win. You don't have to, it's very easy. Free. Completely free.
So put your stuff in our widget.
Put your stuff in our widget. You can win a Hawkeye hardcover. Retail value, $40. 40 of them.
40. Good times.
Good times. But that will be linked in the show notes as well on our Facebook page. And I've been plastering all over our social media, and I will continue to do so. And now I think it is time to end the dicking around.
I give you my permission.
Okay, good. That's what I was waiting for.
No, and wait. I want to talk about how I'm full of pork. Some more.
You're full of pork?
No, let's go.
Okay. Well, we're going to jump into checking in. I have something that I'll check in with.
You'll check in for a change.
I will for a change.
For a change.
For some change. Pennies.
Mm-hmm.
This is a game that actually I showed to Eric while he was here.
Yes, it was ridiculous.
It's a game called Dive Kick. It is a fighting game available on PS3. I believe on PC as well, if you're one of those people who play fighting games on computers. I think most people play them on consoles. But Dive Kick, it's a downloadable title. It is a fighting game that has only two buttons. There are no directional controls. There's nothing except two buttons. One button is dive, and one button is kick.
It's actually jump.
I know.
It says dive. it's the damn jump button.
It's a jump button. The name of the game is Dive Kick. So
yeah, I know.
Dive, whatever. But there's two buttons. You do everything with only two buttons. And it kind of boils fighting, mechanically, it's boiling fighting games down to its very core, which is kind of just like area control and knowing how far your character can reach and how far they can move and stuff like that. But thematically, it is fucking ridiculous because it pretty much just is ridiculing every fighting game trope there is. And gaming tropes in general, really.
Yeah, it doesn't seem exclusive to
fighting games.
Just fighting games.
Because there's like, you have, when it first was created, there's only two characters. There was Dive and Kick. And they're kind of like the Ken and Ryu of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're very similar, but they're like the basic characters. But then they have a lot of weird characters that are just, there's like an angel. And then there's like a professional gamer. There's like a big fat man child
that wears a cape and footy pajamas.
Footy pajamas and a cape and a neck pillow.
A neck pillow. Yeah, there's I forgot about that.
The weird science experiment bear thing. There's like a Cable/Lobo anti-hero.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a pro wrestler.
There's an insane homeless man that wears boots on his hands.
Uncle Sensei. There's a nurse character that we kind of decided was the best character.
Which one?
The nurse.
Oh god, she's like cheating. She's so overpowered that I think she should be banned from that game or nerfed terribly.
But it's really, really stupid.
Mm.
It's one hit kills.
Yes.
First 2-5 wins a match.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only 20 second rounds, and generally they're over very quickly. It's like a sumo match.
Yeah.
Kind of just over like in 10 seconds. But it's a lot of fun.
It was
despite all those things.
Yeah, it was I don't know. I don't think you can play it over the PlayStation Network, can you?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I think we're going to have to play some more, because that was a hell of a lot of fun. I'll have to get my own copy.
I think it's $10.
Yeah.
On,
whoa.
On PSN.
That's not that bad, but considering the amount of content, that it that's about twice as much as it should be, in my opinion.
Meh.
I mean, it's awesome. I really like it, and I will still probably pay the $10. I think I have $10 in my PlayStation wallet.
I've spent more money on less game, so I'm not gonna.
Yeah. So it goes.
Complain about it. But it's. I mean, I played it with Yusef, and he loved it too. So I think it's.
It's
worth it. He schooled me though. He kicked my ass.
That's shocking.
Well, he likes fighting games. He's a fighting game guy.
Hmm.
He beats me in Marvel vs. Capcom too. I'm not a big fighting game person. So
you have admitted as much to me.
Yeah, you everyone. I usually lose at fighting games. I'm okay with that. It's usually I enjoy it despite that. I don't like as many fighting games as I do. You know,
like FPS and
everything,
whatever else.
But, yeah, but I still enjoy Daikick very much. And I think this is the learning curve is just learning a character and how they move and stuff and their special ability, which is generally ridiculous, along with everything else in the game. But yeah, that's all I got. Eric, what do you got?
Pretty light week. Me trying not to go broke with the Steam sale and having to resist buying everything, but I did get a couple of games off of my my wish list. Trine, the original Trine, was only $1.
Wow.
I probably should have bought the sequel, but I've had my eye on those. You don't like them?
From when I played, I didn't. Yeah, I played the original, I think, on Xbox. And it was kind of. It was. I mean, it's nice enough.
I
just wasn't blown away by it.
Right. I've not tried either of them at this point. Right now, I'm probably just going to go through Borderlands, which I bought for $15, and then hours after I bought it, it was cut in half, so it was selling for like $7.50. And I was disappointed by that, so then I bought my brother a copy. And
what, the first one?
Borderlands 2. I already had Borderlands.
Okay.
I think I bought it over the summer Steam sale.
I like two better than one.
Yeah, it's vastly superior, at least in the I don't know, the menus and the feel of the game.
UI is a lot better.
The UI and little automated things, like you can walk over to the money and it picks it up for you. You don't have to go around looking at the friggin' ground and clicking on everything.
Yeah. Little things like that make a difference. Which character have you been playing as?
Zero.
Okay. Did you get the DLC with it too?
I did not. I just wanted the game, and I'll worry about DLC later.
No, I mean, I'm mainly the additional characters is what I was curious about.
Oh, of course.
You got those?
I did not. Okay. I don't really see a huge point in it because I'm not interested in the Necromancer, and I don't know that I want to play the Psycho either.
Psycho is so much fun.
Is he?
Yeah.
I mean,
incredibly frustrating as well, but when he works well, it's like so much fun playing as him.
I might, I don't know, based on your recommendation, because this is not the first time you recommended it was probably a dozen episodes ago, maybe longer than that, you were playing Borderlands yourself.
Yes.
You recommended that guy.
Yeah, I love him. He's my favorite character. He's my main character. Like, I was playing as Zero until they unlocked... Until that character came out as DLC, and then as soon as I had him available, I just started playing as him, and I caught up, and now he's my top character by far.
I'll probably have... I only did one character in Borderlands, the original, and I will never... I don't think I'm ever going to play it again, even though I really loved it. But I will probably have a couple characters in Borderlands 2. I think I'm gonna do the Siren next.
Yeah, she's really good too. I like her much more than the Siren in the original.
I checked out the good old games.com sale too.
Mm-hmm. You gonna get any stuff on it?
I found there were two other. I didn't get the Soul Reaver games, which I should have done, but I did get Guilty Gear Iska and Guilty Gear Zigzag's Sharp Reload. That's how that's pronounced, by the way. The two X's. It used to, like, if you listen to them say it in Japanese, they say zigzags.
Zigzags?
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. The people.
What about three X's?
I do not know how that would be said.
Zigzags, zigzags.
Sure.
All right.
They're strange people, but they're the thing about them is when I had them before, they were all in standard, like, you know, 640 def, you know, 480p, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
And they're not in, like, you know, 1080p or something, but they're in higher resolution, and it's glorious. It's nice to see that, and running on my PC, a game from a million years ago.
Yeah, but still.
And some nice person gifted Final Fantasy VII to me.
Some nice person. That's very nice of them.
Yeah, it was. Someone, they gave me a present for their birthday.
That's what hobbits do.
That is what hobbits do, I guess.
Hobbits give everyone else presents on their birthday.
I wonder if that means that I know any hobbits.
I don't know.
I'm trying to get you to say her name. Is it that obvious?
I was purposely avoiding it.
You're being a dickhole? Yeah, that's good. What are you going to say? Who's Kim back to me?
Kim, who's Kim?
She's fuck you, Robbie. That's who she is.
That's not very nice at all.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Goodness gracious.
So, a crap ton of video games. Oh, I bought storage for the server. I got 6 terabytes for $89 each. Not each terabyte, but each 2 hard drives, like under $200 for both of them.
It's good.
6 terabytes.
That's a lot. It's a lot of terabytes.
It's a few. It's some terabytes. I'll keep you posted on server project.
Good.
You can pretend to be interested.
I will continue.
Oh, Robbie. Pee on your grave.
You assume you're going to outlive me.
Of course I will.
Of course you will. While you're planning to murder me?
No, it's just the first day that people can become robots. I'm there.
Oh, well, that's not really outliving me.
Well, it sort of would be. It sort of wouldn't be. It really.
Robots don't pee.
It really depends on how you define life, and then you're one of those, you know, can a submarine swim questions.
Well, can a submarine swim?
Well, that's how do you define swim? It can move through water.
It does move through water.
Do you know that question?
No.
It's what Noam Chomsky said when in regard to the discussion of can machines think. It's like, well, can a submarine swim? How do you define the term think?
Self-awareness?
I don't know. The whole... This is quite a tangent that we're about to start talking about. We're going to start debating strong AI. I love this. I think I don't want to stop this discussion, but I think we have to because it seems like we're not supposed to talk about Noam Chomsky and strong AI. We're supposed to talk about goddamn comic books.
Goddamn comic books. Well, let's get on to some goddamn comic books.
Holy crap.
Holy crap. Next up, we got a big week this week, and we're reviewing 6 whole books plus Nerd Boy Book Club. We got a lot to discuss. Starting off with weekly floppies. And I mean, there's so many good books that came out this week. It's ridiculous. It was hard to cut it down to 6. I mean, Saga came out this week. Rat Queens came out this week. I didn't put either of those on here. I mean, Saga, we generally been waiting for the trade anyway, so. But starting off, we're going to start off with Pretty Deadly number 2, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art and cover by Emma Rios, colors by Jordi Belair, and letters by Clayton Cowles.
I tried to follow the artist for this book on Twitter, and her friggin' Twitter username is misspelled.
Is it?
Yep, that is not her Twitter handle. I would be pissed if I was her. Or she might not realize. Actually, I think I might tweet that out. Or
the, I don't see. I haven't seen anybody mention it. So this is. I don't know. It answers a couple questions and then raises a couple more.
Yeah, I think
this book.
I think it just sort of deepens the mystery.
Yeah,
a lot of this is a lot of, you know, what the fuck is happening, but
yeah,
it's still fucking. It's so fun. It's so awesome.
Yeah, and you do get to see Ginny finally appear and fucking murder.
Oh my god, she
like six people.
she takes some bitches down. She is not playing around.
Well, she is Death's daughter. You would assume she's good at murdering.
She's the daughter of the fucking people up. That's what she is.
You don't get a whole bunch of, like, I mean, as much as there was, like, most of the first issue was a lot of kind of mysterious exposition and introducing all this whole cast of characters. A lot of this book is, you know, her murdering people.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it kind of is important to establish her her skills, I guess. But, I mean, the visuals are unbelievable.
No, they're really beautiful. It's pretty clear, Emma Rios. It's all very manga-inspired.
Yeah.
Certainly through the action and how... I always want to say yaoi, but it's more... It's like shoujo boys, the pretty boys.
Ah, yes.
It's the action scenes are very, very manga. I don't know, it's interesting that these influences have had a couple of generations of artists to go by, and it's nice to see people that have these influences but are still, you know, they're still making it their own.
Yeah, and I mean, it's incredibly beautiful and kinetic, and the action scenes mm-hmm. are incredibly expressive.
Mm, yeah, and, absolutely.
And really gory.
I love the overall color theme throughout the book, too. It's, yes. We were talking about that just the other day. But was it Sandman? We were talking about how poor the color is. And
yeah, and
this was the example you brought up.
Yeah, like, well, I mean, as you read about, like, how these new, you know, indie books are being hyped up and, you know, developing. And as I'm, like, I'm reading, you know, Kelly Sue DeConnick has a Tumblr and I follow her. And, you know, she was talking about this whole year, basically, mm-hmm. and how everyone in this team, like, they sat down and just, like, the colorist was involved in every step of the way in the design process.
Right.
Like,
I mean, why wouldn't they be?
Exactly.
You know, it's particularly nowadays, even though they don't get top billing, they're the ones that are bringing in just as much mood and atmosphere, and they're making art as much as anything.
Yeah, and Jordi Belair is, I mean, she's one of the best in the business. I mean, everyone talks about her, you know. She's much sought after mm-hmm. for big projects like this, and
this is like an almost all-girl team, isn't it?
Yep, almost.
They're knocking it out of the friggin' park.
It's one of those books that raises questions that you want to know the answers to.
Mm-hmm.
These really intriguing characters. And
right.
They're still, you finally meet Ginny and kind of get a little bit of insight into her, and then suddenly, and there's a couple other characters that are introduced, and you're very curious what there's like this day maid and night maid that are only there for like a page, and I'm like, I don't know who they are, but I'm curious. Stellar.
The only thing that I'm a little concerned about, just based on how this issue moves compared to the last one,
mm-hmm.
I just worry about pacing.
Yeah.
In the future, and I hope that, like, I would like the bulk of this series to move more like the first, more like the first issue. It was a more Western modern comic style of storytelling. Yeah. This one is very much sort of a manga style of storytelling, and I don't want to see it really drag on. If it's kind of a mix of both, I think that's going to be great. I just don't want to see it like start to move too slow, because they have to pad out all these action scenes.
No, I expect it to be a mixture.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume. I mean, you have to. I don't know. She Kelly Sue said they have a lot of stuff. They had this arc already, you know, planned out, and it was relatively self-contained, I think. So I don't. I think that every arc as they go will build, you know, if there's enough demand, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they have each, you know, 5 or 6 issues planned ahead.
Yes.
And then they just let them go. I expect the pace to be relatively even, you know, from issue, like, you know, issue to issue, I think, you know, to even out, average out to a mm-hmm. steady, consistent pace. But yeah, this is a very good comic.
That's exciting. I'm certainly looking forward to seeing more.
Yes, me too. I am a buy. We are.
Yeah.
I assume we're both buys.
100% buy.
Definitely go get it. And next up, something I am very interested to see what Eric thinks about this comic, is Black Science number 1, written by Rick Remender, art by Matteo Scalera, colors by Dean White, I believe. Yes. Dean White with the says painted art, so I'm assuming he's coloring over Scalera's pencils, and then Russ Wooten with the letters. I love Rick Remender. I make no bones about that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. As soon as I started reading this book, I'm like, man, Robbie sure is gay for Rick Remender.
Yeah, I am. This is kind of it echoes a little bit of his one of his big indie book, Fear Agent. It kind of has it starts off in that kind of feel. Kind of it has that pulp science fiction feel. But then the main character is completely different than the main character of Fear Agent. And that, I'm interested in what you think about this, Eric. Do you like it?
I had a good time reading it. I like, this is a story I had no ground coming in, no bearing at all, coming in completely out of nothing. And I liked the point that it starts me at. It hooks me really early. It sort of sets the time bomb. It gets me turning the pages. You know, it manages to keep me interested through the whole book. I think everything in it's really sound. The art is gorgeous. And I think Remender is really doing his job, you know. All this stuff is being interested in a way that keeps me turning the pages, so I felt a little frustrated by the ending, just because it sort of felt like having the rug pulled out from under me without really explaining anything. I have to say I'm pretty intrigued by it. What did you expect me to say?
That's what I expected. Okay. I wasn't sure, though. Sometimes I can't predict.
No, it's
your opinions.
There are things about it that I don't like. There are problems more that I have with this genre than problems specific to this. I think that everybody's paying their dues on this one. It's a nice team effort, and I think it's a great book.
Yeah, I really liked the I enjoy this main character. I like his.
Mm-hmm. His sort of anarchist streak.
Yes, it's weird. That,
it's, I mean, yeah, it's nice that he's able to reveal that much character so quickly, and it's not necessarily boring or anything.
It strikes me more as like a kind of a Reed Richards without any kind of boundaries, discover at any cost. That's the kind of the feel I got out of it, and I'm. And I don't know how, like you said, the ending is a little jarring. But yeah. I don't know what to expect from this series, if they're going to continue, like, because I don't know if they're going to be jumping from world to world. You know, is that the entirety of the...
It's going
to
be... Yes. It's going to be like Sliders.
I certainly hope it's not like Sliders.
As do I.
Fear Agent had a kind of a feel like that a little bit, like from arc to arc. Like, they jump from one world to, like, you know, in an arc, and then a new world, and they discover a new race or something like that. But it's only a first issue, so I don't... I kind of like the setting, at least, on the last page, the big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
It looks interesting.
It does look pretty fascinating. But, I mean, you know, the world they were in previous is still, I mean, it was beautiful and fun to look at. I don't know. I don't think that it's not the way that I wanted that page turn to run.
Yeah, I'm withholding judgment to see how the series goes. I certainly don't want them jumping all the time from world to world, but we'll see. It's one issue. It's impossible to.
Yeah, I don't want to read Quantum Leap.
No. And like you said, the art is gorgeous. This is another one that's been on my radar for quite a while. I'm definitely a buy.
Yeah, I would. I'd recommend this. So, bye.
Bye, double bye. Double bye.
So we need little Pootie to descend and play trumpets.
Pootie?
Little naked cherub angel things.
Ah, yes.
That's what they're called, Pootie. Pootti.
That's a terrible name.
Well, it is a terrible name, but I didn't create it.
I know you didn't.
Somebody a shit long time ago decided that's what they were called. And I think they were Italian.
Mm.
It probably sounds less dumb to a person from the Renaissance and Italy.
That's true. But we are going to jump over to DC, our only DC book of the week.
You want to elaborate on why?
Well, there was... In Marvel, we're about to read the last two issues of Infinity.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I definitely wanted to read Uncanny Avengers. So that's three issues for Marvel. There's more indie books I wanted to put in here, but I didn't. Because we can't be reading 10 books in a week or something and reviewing all of them.
Why don't when we finish the floppies, you list off all the books that you were interested in that you may or may not have read?
Okay.
I think it's worth mentioning.
Sure. But... The only book in DC this week that interested me at all was Larfleeze, number 5, which is what we were reading. The rest of them were kind of meh. It's a whole bunch of zero-year tie-ins. Like, all the solo books?
Right.
A whole bunch of zero-year. I don't really care about what they're doing when all the stuff that other characters were doing when Batman was first becoming Batman. I barely care about zero-year as it is.
I'm pretty much done with it.
I mean, they've just... After that first arc, just kind of... We gave it a chance. I think we read 4 or 5 issues of it, and it's just... Yeah. It just lost me. And so, I don't really care about the tie-in issues this year, and Larfleeze, thankfully, is not connected to it at all.
It would be really weird.
Weirdo.
Yeah, it'd be really weird.
Weirdo alien out in outer space. Thankfully disconnected from everything else for the most part. And this is more Larfleeze. More of the same kind of feel that we've gotten in the first 4 issues of this. Although, I think the weird thing about this book is that the book's called Larfleeze. And the most interesting things are the things that don't happen to Larfleeze, I guess.
I disagree. I really like the ending.
You like the twisting?
Yeah, I really...
I'm actually a bastard?
Well, I'm just really curious where that's going to go. I mean, it seems likely, yes, that he's that huge douchebag. That seems a lot within his character, but I like that... I like that conflict. That's pretty serious in a not very serious comic.
That's very true.
And it doesn't... It's not doing it in a way that... It's doing it in a way that makes me feel like, despite being really goofy...
Yeah.
It's a fairly deep book. It's written by someone that's thought a lot of things through. And not in a way like, oh, this is so... You always describe it as gritty. I don't know if that's exactly what I'm trying to say, but it's... That way that DC's been doing their books.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Serious.
Exactly.
Serious adult things.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's why one of the reasons I enjoy this book so much is because it's not that. Even when it has serious things in it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't try and be so gritty, as you've already said. That word works for me. It's fine.
I think it does, but I think that I'm trying to say something subtly different, and I can't
articulate.
Yeah, I can't quite.
Can't word it.
But this, I think, this is actually my favorite issue of Larfleeze so far.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Or at least I'm dying to know what comes next at this point. So maybe the next one will be, but I think this is probably my favorite. Just off of what I've seen.
Okay. I mean, I'm not saying I didn't like it.
It doesn't have the little worm guys getting killed, though.
It does not have any little worm, little cute, happy worm guys getting murdered. Yeah, I still liked it. Art's still good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Larfleeze is still a douchebag.
He is. He's the douchiest douche that ever lived. I forgot this is where we invented Purple Thulu.
Purple Thulu, yep.
I'm so proud of us.
But it's still kind of, even when it's being serious, still kind of lighthearted and goofy.
Yeah.
And quite enjoyable. I did not... Written by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. Art by Scott Collins. Colors by Mike Atea. Dave Sharp doing the letters. But I'm a buy. I'm continue to be a buy.
Absolutely. Buy Larfleeze. So hard.
So hard.
Mm-hmm.
But now, we jump over to our Marvel books. This is a big week in Marvel because it's the end of Infinity. But before we get to that, we're going to jump over to Uncanny Avengers, number 14. Written by, again, Rick Remender. With pencils by Steve McNiven. And inks by John Dell, Laura Martin doing the colors. And Clayton Cowles doing the letters, who also did Pretty Deadly.
I didn't even think about this being... illustrated by Steve McNiven.
That's one of the reasons I picked it, because I know you...
Now, I remember you saying that, and then I immediately forgot. Who did the inks on this?
John Dell.
John Dell.
What's his name? But we are... This issue is the start of serious shit going down.
Yeah, it's pretty effing serious.
Yeah, this is... We're seeing things come to a head. The Apocalypse Twins have kidnapped Scarlet Witch and Wonder Man... and are trying to enter her into an agreement to basically ensure the future of the mutant race. She's planning a, you know, turn on them secretly, but Wolverine, Rogue, Sunfire are all coming to stop her, you know, ostensibly from doing this. And by the same time, Kang is doing some machinations behind the scene, kidnapping people from across time, or saving them across time, honestly. But... there is some serious going downs in this book.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about it because it's hard not to. So, spoiler alert.
Yeah, you haven't read it.
Yeah, it's 5 minutes.
Serious shit.
Yeah, Rogue fucking murders Scarlet Witch.
Mm-hmm.
And then Grim Reaper fucking impales Rogue and then electrocutes her from the inside. Jesus, with some serious skeleton action.
I was just reading that as, he just burns her up completely.
No, maybe that's it. Well, you don't see her remains, so it's hard to say. But regardless, she is really dead.
Yes.
I don't think... unless they pull, she still has Wolverine's healing factor.
Oh, God, that's what they are going to do. That's, that is totally what they're going to do.
I don't know. Even that has its limits, and she's only... copying his ability.
But, no. I mean, when she copies an ability, she has that ability. But, that bugs me, because I really thought they were going to kill her. I'm like, man, that's some storytelling with some balls there.
I don't know. I'm not going to say that she's alive.
I don't particularly want them to kill Rogue, but if there's a charred southern fried skeleton in the next issue... I don't know that I'm going to be happy, but I'm going to just nod my head satisfied.
Yeah, and it's not like... and then Wonder Man, evaporates himself into Wanda. And then she dies, apparently.
Yep.
So... and, her final words, "Rise, mutants of Earth." I've been kind of... The last couple issues of this have been kind of slow. But this is, Rick Remender has said, this is the issue. This 14 through 18 mm-hmm. are, a whole, serious shit hitting the fan the entire time. And this certainly has started all that.
Yeah.
Dear Lord.
That's, it's pretty epic.
It's really, I'm loving this because this book, this is really continuing a lot of the themes that he was exploring in Uncanny X-Force about, you know, lethal force and, you know, killing and punishment and redemption and all that shit. And I'm very interested to see what is going to happen in the next issue. And McNiven's art is great. I mean, I'm a big fan of his as well. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, he's as good as anyone, I think, that's worked. God, I don't even know what constraints, what qualifications I can put on it. He's as good as practically anyone that's worked in comics. He's top tier.
It's
beautiful.
It's great work.
I think one of the things that I like about it is it his angles. I don't want to say camera angles, but that communicates what I'm trying to say.
Right. Perspective.
Perspective. Like, everything is very dynamic. It's a lot less boring than most comic artists tend to do. You know, he's drawing these characters from all manner of different perspectives, very difficult ones, like where you could easily communicate the same idea in a panel. He goes for something just a little bit offbeat or a little bit just to keep it more interesting, you know, like one of the last page there where Rogue is not stabbed, where she,
yes,
it's just like the it's just like the bust of her.
Mm-hmm.
Like that in particular, like I think you could communicate that emotion a lot easier, and yet he chose to draw like from under her chin and looking this way, and that's fucking hard to draw. Anyone that's ever had to draw a human head at that angle, that's hard. That's incredibly difficult. And I don't know. He does it with perfect aplomb. It's pretty damned good. But the whole book is just full of that. And the inker is working really well with him too. When they did Old Man Logan,
mm-hmm,
Dexter Vines did the inks, and I think that there's some similarities between those inks and these. I think these are actually a little cleaner and simpler. And the coloring is a little bit more garish and comic booky, but I think it works perfectly well for this.
Oh yeah. I love Rick Remender. I love Steve McNiven. I've enjoyed this series thus far, and this is probably my favorite issue of this book so far. So I am certainly a buy on this.
It's dynamite.
If you've not been reading Uncanny Avengers, get this book. Start. It's about to hit a roller coaster. A lot of things are about to start paying off, and certainly it's a good time to jump aboard. We are both buys, mm-hmm, on Uncanny Avengers number 14. Next up, here it is, Eric. The last issue of Infinity number 6, written by Jonathan Hickman. Pencils by Jim Chung with Dustin Weaver. Inkers Mark Morales, Dustin Weaver, Guillermo Ortega, Dave Mankus, Jim Chung, and John Livesey. And colors by Justin Ponser with Ives Forcina. Letters Chris Eliopoulos. I can never say this. Eliopoulos. Talking is really difficult. But this is, we get the final showdown with Thanos powerhouses. Of the Avengers plus Cap, because you have to have Cap in there for some reason. And because his shield is fucking, you know, a great set piece.
It's very shieldy.
It's a good set piece. Like, it's something you can, like, throw it in there. Plus, we get, you know, a whole bunch of storylines all paying off all at the same time. What do you think, Harry? Do you think this is a satisfactory ending to Infinity?
I mean, it's clearly not wrapping everything up.
No, there's certainly. I mean, it's there. There's.
I mean, even with is it Avengers or it's New Avengers?
New Avengers. We're going to be discussing that next.
Yeah, even that doesn't wrap everything up.
That's an epilogue to this in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. It's a good read. I'm glad, and I'm glad we finally come to this point. Jesus Christ. I don't want to answer that question you just asked me, but what I will say is I was where I had been a little low on Infinity. I was excited to read this, and it was a blast. You know, it's a great book.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And again, it ends the threat of Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
At least now. I mean, obviously he's a character that never is going to go away.
Yeah.
Permanently. But you kind of get the true powers of Thane are completely revealed, and now he's a new player. I guess in the Marvel universe, you get a really awesome fight scene with Thor, Hyperion, Hulk, Captain Marvel, and Captain America against Thanos and a couple of his lieutenants, which, I mean, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous battle. I mean, this whole book is really nice looking.
Yeah.
Jim Chung does a great job always, but he does very colorful and lovely. But in as much as this is I don't know if we can even talk about this book without talking also about New Avengers, which is the last book of the week.
Yeah.
Because that serves as a kind of an epilogue. I mean, this book has an epilogue where it hits on, like, we see that all these alien civilizations are kind of regrouping. Annihilus has his own world now. Thane has, like, the creepy Ebony Maw, who is one of Thanos' lieutenants, is now his mentor. We see some of the plans of Black Bolt and Maximus kind of coming to fruition. Thanos is like in this, living death, it's called.
Yeah, he's an amber.
I get, it looks like he's just like alive, but not alive. Like he can't move or do anything, but I don't know if he's still cognizant of things that are happening around him or not. But he's like frozen in a giant cube. Orange cube. But on this issue, I'm certainly a buy. If you've been reading Infinity all along, there's almost no issue, almost no reason not to buy this.
Yeah, it would be kind of foolish not to buy this one.
But yeah, it's certainly like, I think we were talking about, like, you know, five in the last couple issues of Avengers have been kind of like slowing down almost. This certainly pays off a lot of plot lines in a big way. Although it raises as many questions as it answers. But, I mean, it's changing the landscape of the Marvel Universe in a lot of ways. Like, Avengers vs. X-Men did that, and now this is going to do it again. I mean, that's kind of what Marvel's events do. They kind of set the status quo for a year or two, and then it changes again. But I'm a buy.
Mm-hmm.
On Infinity number 6. If you've been reading it, you might as well continue. It's as good. It's better than the last. I think it's the best one since whatever one that Thor launched a hammer through that dude. I think that was 3. I want to say.
Sounds about right.
But we're gonna. The last issue of this week is Weekly Floppies. It's New Avengers number 12, which serves sort of as even an epilogue to Infinity, even though Infinity number 6 had an epilogue inside of it. This whole issue kind of...
It's just too much content to wrap up.
Yeah, it really covers just basically the Illuminati and their perspective on, you know, things as the Infinity wraps up. You know, we see Black Panther kind of an outcast of his own country.
Mm-hmm.
We get some insight on Black Bolt and his plans. Doctor Strange unleashing some awful power. You know, something that he was waiting to use until the last moment. But that's an amazing page.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I love that. That's a great page. That's probably my favorite page in this whole book, is Strange, Doctor Strange, just like, you know. He's the doctor, Eric.
Pardon?
He's the doctor.
Sure.
I am the Doctor. None of that Doctor Who bullshit.
I think that Doc Strange and the Doctor would get along quite well.
They probably would.
They'd be bros.
As much as Doctor Strange could be a bro.
I think... I don't know. He's got to be bros with somebody. He's bros with his Wong.
He is bros with Wong. But I think the gist of this issue, the core of it, is their discussion with the Black Swan at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Where she's like, you think anything you just dealt with was hard or difficult? You're wrong. The worst is still coming.
I think that's my favorite page.
Really? Everything dies? Or the page where the giant space things are like floating around and she's...
Giant space things.
Yes. The things that we don't really know what they are. Yes. Except they're like, they look like Jack Kirby creations.
Mm-hmm. They're Kirby-esque.
They're like
fucking horrifying.
They are. They're really like a giant space thing with a giant eye and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but...
Some giant robot monster with a spaceship for a head.
Yes.
It's a giant robot with a Reaper for a head.
Exactly.
The old machines.
Yes, the masters, the black priests, whatever. She has names for these things because they haven't encountered them yet. But it's suitably Jonathan Hickman because that is his way to have things, you know, like 100 issues, whatever it is, you know, ahead of time. I didn't mention also writer Jonathan Hickman, artist Mike Diodato, colors by Frank Martin, and letters by Joe Caramagna. But the issue is gorgeous. It's very nice. I like it. Not as much as probably Infinity 6, but it's still very good. It has ill portents for the future of the Illuminati. I like it. I'm a buy.
No, absolutely. Absolutely buy this book.
Yeah, this is the thinky side of this book has always been the thinky side of the Avengers and the Illuminati and like the and all these great conspiracies, and this is no different. And it's only going to get more interesting, I think, as it goes.
Absolutely.
So, did we disagree at all this week?
No, every book was amazing.
By the way, I had mentioned earlier. There are several books on here that I did not include, just because, I mean, we could not, we did not have time to read about, you know, read every friggin' book that came out. But Saga came out this week, and Hawkeye came out this week, both of which I did not read. I trade weight on both of those. I know, I'm an awful person.
Mm-hmm.
Spear of Spider-Man with a Venom tie-in came out this week, which, I you know, it's my first, it's not the first Superior Spider-Man book I've read. I've read a couple of the early issues. And the premise still bothers me. But I like seeing, you know, Flash Thompson, you know, encountering Superior Spider-Man for the first time. So, it's interesting. I'm interested to see what happens. And, it comes out every 2 weeks, so it's not hard to... You don't have to wait very long for payoff in that, so we'll see what happens. Nothing of consequence happens in this issue, if you're curious. Rat Queens 3 came out this week. We had read the first two issues, and I would love to include it, but we just did not have room. It was very good. A lot more character stuff in this book than in the first two.
I may have to pick it up.
It's very good. I enjoyed it a lot. You get. And then, you know, a lot of humor, but a lot more like, you know, little character spots here and there between all the rat queens. You get a little insight into them. It's really interesting stuff. Nope, I think that is it as far as new releases, plus the stuff that I had mentioned that came out when I did not read. But an excellent week in comics. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Now we're going to move on to Nerd Boy Book Club. We are continuing with The Sandman, Volume 3 and 4 this week.
Mm-hmm.
3, what is the name of 3?
3 is Dream Country.
Dream Country, and then 4 is Seasons of Mist.
Mm-hmm.
Week 3.
Season of Mists.
Oh, Season of Mists.
Yes.
There you go.
Because we have to be...
One season.
We have to be nice and exact.
Nice and exact. The Dream Country is four mostly unrelated stories. Just kind of little...
Yeah.
One-shot issues. One-shot, yeah. Basically, just covering different things. Which, I mean, in this kind of series, it can work because the cast is so large.
Mm-hmm.
And it still can still give you background on the universe. And obviously, it's not... I didn't really like this nearly as much as the Volume 4. And I think it... The first arc is kind of like this a little bit, even though it still does mostly cover Morpheus.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly did not enjoy this volume as much as 4.
See, I think it's very interesting because historically, number 3 is one of my low points in the series, and having reread it this time,
mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it way more than I ever had. And I enjoyed Season of Mists less, so...
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with Season of Mists. It's just, I got so charged up reading it before. To where, like, I don't know. It was very interesting discovering Dream Country again, because I felt like there was a lot that I missed in all these stories. I don't know. It's... They were all more interesting to me.
Which of the four is your favorite?
Which of what four? The four
the dream,
little
the
stories.
Four issue, the four stories in Dream Country.
That's a tough call. I always hated the one with Element Girl. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Facade.
Yeah, that's who that is. Element Girl.
Yeah,
that's a funny story about this that was in the Sandman Companion. To where Neil asked his editor, Karen Berger, he's like, can I kill Element Girl? And she goes, who? Because that's always kind of been Neil Gaiman's MO, is finding these weird, obscure-ass characters and doing whatever the hell he wants to with them.
Like Dr. Destiny?
Yeah. Like Dr. Destiny. But I never really understood this story, and I think it works for me a lot better than it used to.
Is that your favorite?
No. I think I do. It's just, it was easily like the thing that I hated the most in the series, and now I really like it. No, I think the story that I like the most is the first one with the Muse. Yeah.
Yes, that is mine as well.
Because this is one of the few times you get to see Calliope. And I think that it's one of the first times where you start to see... And it's a motif throughout the whole series. But I think it's one of the first most obvious points where they say how Morpheus and his ordeal and being in prison for those... Was it 70 or 80 years? I always think it's 80, but I think it actually is 70. For the 70 years he was imprisoned.
Yeah.
And how it's changed who he is.
Right.
Pretty much everything that is in the series is as a result of how he's different based on that experience.
Yeah, and they touch upon that more in Season of Mists as mm-hmm. well.
Absolutely.
But, that's my favorite. Calliope is certainly my favorite.
So you,
of those four issues.
You didn't like the Kitty story?
I actually like that one the least, probably.
Interesting.
I don't know. I did not enjoy this. I mean, I love cats. Get me wrong. Eric can attest to that.
I have noticed.
Yeah. I am a full-on cat person. I mean, I love... Dogs are great, too. I have nothing against dogs. Like, there seems like there'd be that weird schism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to choose one. I'm like, I like both. But I am a cat person. Certainly. But I just... It feels like what a stereotype of what cat people think of. Think mm-hmm. like. Like, oh, kitty cats, they have such deep thought, and, mm-hmm. you know, they're superior beings, or whatever, they're cute animals. They're mostly empty headed like all animals. You know, they're ruled by instinct. And it just seems like this is something that, like, if you're criticizing a cat person, you could, like, point to this issue and say, look, this is what it's like. This is what they think. They think cats are like people. And I'm like, it feels ridiculous to me. That, like, I don't know what this is supposed to, is this supposed to presuppose that, like, all animals have this, like, level of thinking? Or just cats? And that any animal can, like, if anything can dream of something, it makes it happen? Like, that is another issue I have with it, is that it, like, introduces this whole idea that if enough people dream something at the same time, that it suddenly remakes reality. Is that touched upon again in this series?
It's kind of a reoccurring motif about, you know, dreams and, you know, like how he's called Shaper.
Right.
And that's even what Morpheus means.
Right.
It's kind of a reoccurring motif. But I mean, the cat story, you can take it with as many grains of salt as you want to.
Yeah, it just seems kind of like empty. It doesn't seem to have any kind of meaning to it. I don't know. I felt a little bit like the Shakespeare one felt a little bit like that too, until I read Season of Mist and you see like the fairy people are, you know, are players in that. So I go, oh, okay, well, you're getting background on that. That's, you know, and it's adding to this pantheon that he's built.
Yep.
Of all these of creatures. But the cat one is just kind of inconsequential, I think. It's not that interesting of a story to me, even.
Like, yeah, it's completely a one-shot in that nothing that's introduced in it is ever mentioned again, ever.
Yeah, which I don't... I guess every issue doesn't have to be, like, full of importance or whatever, but... when you hear, oh, the Sandman, it's this great series, it's so amazing, and then you kind of read an issue where it's just like... But why is this even in this? I still enjoyed the four issues as a whole. They certainly had a lot of good stuff in them. Very quickly, for listeners who haven't read them, there's one. First one's Calliope. It's about one of the muses being imprisoned, and Morpheus helping her. There's A Dream of a Thousand Cats, which is all... This is the cat one we just were talking about. A Midsummer's Night Dream, which is basically Shakespeare performing one of his plays... performing Midsummer's Night Dream to a audience of fairy people. And then the last one is the Element Girl one that Eric was talking about. She's like a Golden Age or Silver Age character.
Well, it's more like Golden Age. I'm sorry, I meant to say Silver Age, but I'm retarded.
Okay, yeah, she's an old character who can... She has the power of transmutation, but... She's mutated now. She can't look like a person anymore.
She's exactly metamorpho.
Yeah. And so that it's basically covering her trauma, her struggles. But the fourth volume is Season of Mists, and that is basically it's quite a long. Let's see, there's eight issues in it, which is quite a long arc, but is basically covering Morpheus's quest to free Nada, who he had imprisoned in hell after her suicide. And it's quite a wonderful story.
I believe I was going to say it's not the first issue. It's like the second or third issue. Nada was all of this was alluded to.
Yeah,
you got to see a glimpse of.
Yeah, as he's in Nada. He's in hell recovering his helmet. You see him. He walks by her, and then later on you get a story about her, about their story about why.
Prologue she's there. To book two.
Yeah, but this is he ends up going to hell and. And you get a little bit of a surprise. You find the devil is tired doing his job, so he's quitting. and gives Morpheus the key to hell.
I'm interested on your takeaway on this. I've read this so many times. I've probably read this. Hell, this might have been the eighth time I've read this book. I don't even know. I've read it so many times. My copy's so old and beat up.
Right.
But I'm really curious to know what you thought about this.
The story as a whole, or just that?
Yeah, just this book.
I liked it a lot. It was. You had mentioned the whole Lucifer quitting before, mm-hmm. so I was kind of expecting that.
Yeah.
But I really liked the whole, now Morpheus having the key and everyone wanting mm-hmm. this wanting hell, all these different, you get the his version of Norse gods, of Odin and Thor and Loki, which they even allude to the superhero versions of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
In the story, plus you get, of course, other, the demons who have been cast out of hell. You get order and chaos. You get the fairy kingdom. You get a Japanese deity. I did not say the Egyptians. There might have been one or two other I'm missing, but they all come to Morpheus in his castle to appeal for hell. They want the real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting. It's kind of a story that's been done in other forms. And Neil Gaiman even kind of... Have you read American Gods? I think I've asked you before.
I have read American Gods.
Can see a lot of that, the seeds of that.
Yes.
In this, certainly. Of this idea that, gods are everywhere. There are many gods of many things. And they kind of... the same kind of vying mm-hmm. for power over different, lands, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it.
Well, that's kind of been his thing for many years. And he talks about, God, what was it? He got sent off to a Catholic school.
Right.
And how it gave him this sense of religion, and all religions is mythology. And... he's always presented them this way, is that they all sort of exist and, under whatever form and fashion. It's a reoccurring motif throughout the whole series.
Yeah.
And through a lot of his work as well.
Yeah. You mentioned this school, a Catholic school, and now that makes me bring up that's the one chapter I really didn't enjoy.
And you would not be the only person to say that. I forced myself to read it because I always hated it, but I think it says some important things that are motifs, they appear over and over anyway. I think it kind of says something that helps the ending a little bit, but it has historically felt very out of place to me.
Yeah, it's just like almost everything in this is, Morpheus
mm-hmm.
and the gods and all these different interactions between all these the endless and the all these minor or major deities. And then suddenly, right in the middle, you get the story about this kid who's stuck at a boarding school, and then all these dead people come back.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't... I was... And it's right in the middle.
Yes.
It
slows down the action.
Yeah, it's serious a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something like, why am I like this kid who's not that interesting? And he dies. Like, I don't... It's like a tragedy. And, they don't... It's just, oh, that's it. Like, I guess... I know it does give you perspective, but, they mention all the dead are coming back to Earth. And all that. I just don't... know why it's there necessarily.
I think it's to show that there are consequences of these things happening.
Okay.
Rooted on Earth, yeah. And I think it ties into the ending. About how the people in hell sort of send themselves there.
Yes.
That they feel like they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of ties into, I think, the angel's vision
Right, of a place that's of redemption,
mm-hmm.
not punishment.
Yeah. I think to that extent it works, but I know pretty much every other time I've read through it, I was like, ugh, this, and I skipped it. But I made myself read it this time, and it doesn't strike me quite as bad as it was before. But I think it's more saying something about, I don't know. It just felt like Neil Gaiman writing about his childhood to an extent.
Yeah, I'm not. I understand that it's important to show humans, the human side of this, and why, you know, how it impacts them.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I don't know, the boarding school felt like an awkward place to do it.
Yeah. Did you know that Jill Thompson did a spinoff series based on these two kids?
I did not know that.
It's called Dead Boy Detectives.
Was that successful?
I don't know. It was probably okay.
Okay.
I mean, I doubt it was a blockbuster or anything, but,
no. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say she's done quite a lot of stuff with Gaiman's characters, and it's all been pretty cute stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to say if we could talk about this the character of Morpheus and how he's kind of softened after his imprisonment. Mm-hmm. You know, death comes to him and says, you know, that. It, you know, you were wrong to imprison Nada,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of spurs this whole story. And he has this kind of confrontation with her at the end and apologizes and agrees with her. And I think that brings up my other point of contention in this,
mm-hmm.
is that it just seems like you kind of. When you, it's revealed that the demons have Nada, you know, and is in a prisoner after hell is closed, and you think, and then, you know, it seems like a almost deus ex machina that, you know, Morpheus just gets whatever he wants. Like, everything works out perfectly. Like, it just, and it seems like it's, like, become a trend where it's just, like, watch him succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that, I'm sure that it will... I don't know if... I have no idea what
you mean in terms of his confrontation with the demon.
Yeah, like he just... Oh, yeah.
Well...
He's in his world, so he's all-powerful.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's no way he could possibly lose that. It's just... You're just supposed to...
It seems super convenient.
Well... I mean, it was really settled before it even began, is the thing. He's an all-powerful being in the heart of the dreaming, and they're in the heart of the dreaming.
I guess I just wanted...
We're given, like, a red herring that it's going to go a different way.
Yeah.
And then
we're
reminded that, that's not really... It's not possible. He's pretty much won before he started.
No, and not even that he wins. It's that he doesn't have to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
About who to give the key to hell to. The choice is kind of made for him.
Well,
you know.
And yeah, and that's fine.
Morpheus is
paying the price, and I think that's sort of what you're getting at. He's paying the price in other ways. You know, he pays the price for his actions. You know, Nada, like... has basically spurned him, and he's had to admit that he's wrong on that, and all of his personal relationships are just working out in these messy ways.
Yeah, I just don't... I guess I wanted him to have to make a hard choice about this key. And in the end, it's just... Here, the angels... And I am also curious about how, like, capital G God...
Mm-hmm.
Where his place is in all of this.
After having read this several times, I think that he's just... I mean, he's absent. He's never shown in any of the books.
Right.
But in my opinion, he's treated just like any other any other mythological figure.
Yeah, that, I mean, that, I understand that. I mean, like, but it just seems like he, Morpheus, when, you know, word comes down, you know, through the angels, that the key should go to them, and now they are ruling hell under God, basically. And Morpheus immediately goes, yes, if he wants it, that's what's going to happen. And I just don't, like, is he on the, and it's all, I mean, it's just as in Christianity, he is the all-powerful, more powerful than Lucifer. You know, that Lucifer is the next most powerful being under him. But then they also say the endless are the only ones that were there at the beginning. And they will the only ones be there at the end, and that all the other gods have a lifespan, supposedly. They can be killed. I'm just curious about, like, what the if they are, if these the endless are supposedly the you know, the beginning, the first structure in the world or whatever, and will be the ones at the end. Why are they ceding to these? Is it just because of its job requirements, or that I have a
couple of thoughts on all of these things. I think that Morpheus gives the key up. Morpheus, and it's a big part of his character, that he's driven by rightness.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, you know, what we might see as a moral rightness, but in terms of doing what is proper and what follows the rules. He's big on following the rules. And he definitely sees it as like, this is a place that was created by this deity. He wants it back. I have no claim to it. It's actually actively causing me problems. I'm turning it over. It's the right thing to do.
Right.
And that's that is what drives so many of his actions. It's what drove him to go back to hell against his, you know, better judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So when his sister says, you did wrong, you need to make it right, then he's got this sense of duty. I have to do the right thing. And that to me is why he makes that decision.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of where the Christian God fits into all this other stuff.
Right.
Here's my two cents on that, based on my understanding of all the gods in the sort of Neil Gaiman, whatever you call it, the Sandman, whatever.
Universe.
Yeah. They're all sort of nourished and made powerful by belief.
Yeah.
And all the old gods are becoming weaker and are dying.
Mm-hmm.
While the gods that have large followings are all powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why Lucifer and capital G God are powerful.
Right.
In this moment where the Sandman universe is happening.
Yeah, I'm also, that brings up a question about there's no Islamic presence or Hindi presence.
Hindi, yeah, would be interesting, but
I mean, Muslim is, I mean, rooted in Judaism, are rooted in the same kind of
religion. Yes, exactly, and I was thinking the exact same thing in that, I was really thinking that all three of these religions are this pantheon right there.
Okay. So that's why he's, because it's all.
Yeah. They're all.
Capital G God is all of Judaism, all of Islam,
yeah,
and all of Christianity.
They're people of the book, as it were.
Okay. But yeah, no Hindi.
Yeah, no, which is disappointing.
Which, I mean, there's.
I think
there's
that maybe.
There's almost a billion Hindi. I would think that they would.
Well, there's. Yeah, there are. I think I've heard estimates, and it is estimates because in India there are a lot of very regional gods.
Right.
So there's no way. It's a lot of tribalism, you know, people that have inherited their, like, their family's gods or whatever. But I don't know. I think I've heard estimates from 1,000 to 20,000
gods. Yeah.
Yeah. In Hinduism, but I think
You would think you would see one of the, you know, the.
Yeah, I think at this, I think maybe he just, I don't know, maybe he just needed to keep it tidier, and he wanted to include the ones that made sense at the time.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious about the, you always think about the ones that weren't there. I mean, Norse gods are, if you really want to make it about belief and all that, it's certainly not nearly as powerful as their, as what the Christian G-O-D, whatever. I don't know. It's certainly more colorful characters, which is maybe the sole reason.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, he's probably just looking for what tells us a story best, with colorful characters in a story. But, would you want to talk about that awful inking? A picture you see?
It actually wasn't the inking. It was the awful printing. You mean
it was the awful printing?
You mean the snapshot that I sent you?
Yeah, I finally got to that page after you had sent it to me. I'm like, oh my god, it's terrible.
Does it look anything close to what I sent you?
Yeah, it looks exactly like it.
Does it really?
Yes.
That's fascinating. You'll have to like send me a screen cap of it or something. I forget
where it was in the story. I meant it. Like, I wish there was a bookmark, like, way I can bookmark pages in those books.
I can send you the chapter. But, I mean, there's examples in mine on nearly every page of some fail. And
yeah, I found it, actually.
Okay.
It's in the first chapter, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks awful.
It is quite poor, but what I have, you've got the digital edition. What do you have?
Yeah,
you have the digital edition, and then that blows my mind that it looks the same. I'm really dying to know what yours looks like. But mine, I have the original trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
It says copyright 1992.
Right,
it was one of the original editions. It's printed on newsprint.
Yeah.
It's really horrible quality. It is old as dirt, and it has been around the bend. It has been beaten up. But the way that this was printed is someone was probably with a brush and some kind of, I think the word is oleophobic or oleophilic.
Mm-hmm.
It's oil loving, I think is what it is. Some substance like that is hydrophobic, oleophilic, resists water and accepts oil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're painting onto plates or whatever to add color to these things. It looks like very crude, manual, very analog color separations were done to this.
Mm.
You know, and that there would literally be a guy with a brush painting on big blobs of whatever for like different colors of ink to go down. It probably was done on sheets of transparencies over top of the inks.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I think about it, and then photographed as color separations to be printed that way.
Yeah.
So there's probably like art sheets of all this crap. But you can see in pages like that that they sort of, they're very generous with the borders. They're not taking a lot of time to be extra careful and just stay within the lines and maybe just go a little bit out. Their plan was to paint it quickly, do it down and dirty, and then print the black on top really heavy, which is going to kill everything. And this should work just fine, but it looks like garbled ass.
The other really bad one I had seen was in the Shakespeare, the Midsummer's Night Dream issue.
I'm flipping to it. This is back in Dream Country.
Yeah, Dream Country. And about three quarters of the way through the book, you it shows one of the characters addressing the audience, and you see almost nothing but black. And I don't know if that's how it's supposed to. I mean, it's just...
You'll have to send me...
It just looks awful. I can't imagine that's what they want. I mean, I would expect them, they want to see all these characters, you know, these colorful fairy creatures. But I just see blackness.
I think that's really interesting because mine doesn't look like that at all. I'm going to have to... you would have to send me a screenshot of that one so I can compare it to mine.
Okay.
You don't have to necessarily do it now, but I'm just dying to know because mine, I'm looking, it's the page right after when the king and queen arrive.
No, this right? is near the end. This is near the end.
I thought you said near the beginning.
No, three quarters of the way through.
Three quarters of the way
it's through. It's like page 20. It has a panel on top with, I don't know which character it is. Doing a monologue, and then has four panels in the middle of Morpheus and the Queen talking to each other.
I'm looking directly at it.
Yeah, and then the bottom panel.
I think that actually is supposed to be done that way. They're just done in silhouette.
I just can't see anything. Like, I only see, like, a couple horns and a feather, or, like, a wing or whatever. I think that if that's what that is.
I think that's more something that they were trying that wasn't so successful.
Yeah, I was looking at that. I'm like, I don't know what happened, but that it just looks like it doesn't look good.
Mm-hmm.
It just looks like you see this character talking to darkness for the most part, which is it's in the middle of the day. Everything should be well lit. Isn't that the whole point of this? That, you know, it's still daytime, and then by the time I guess it's I don't know. Honestly, it ends with it's in.
I was going to say, I think the sun was setting at that point. It was getting later.
Yeah, but then they wake up and it's daytime. I'm just confused by the whole timeline in this issue. But it just doesn't seem like it tells, you know, it doesn't show what I would think they'd want to show. Like, I think you'd want to see this menagerie of fairy kind being addressed by the character.
Mm-hmm.
You only see them one at a time for the most part, which I think, you know, seeing them all at once would be, you know, kind of impressive. Interesting. But it's not necessarily systemic in this whole, in every issue, these problems.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I mean, I'm looking in the copy I have of Dream Country it's an early 2000s edition that I bought off of Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And if I look closely at the artwork, it's done the same way. Which means it's probably printed on different paper with different inks, similar colors, but probably with the same art sheets.
Right.
You know, the same printers probably did it. I want to say that these... It's just sort of the way that the Sandman was done.
I guess
for so many years. And I feel like... I don't know. I'm really dying to see your edition. I might even have to sneak on there and buy a couple of individual issues just to see what they look like in digital format.
It strikes me as odd that something that is, you know, just the art direction is so inconsistent in this. It just seems, because there's other books that are, you know, kind of like this that have, you know, a string of multiple artists working on it, like, especially nowadays. There's plenty of books that, I mean, very few, at least by Marvel and DC, maintain an artist through the entire run of any series. It very rarely happens. But yeah, it's just something like that would have, I mean, this is 20 plus issues in. At this point, I would think this would be like a staple of DC's lineup.
I think at this point it very certainly was a big title at DC. I mean, even for him to be able to get away with the things that he was getting away with.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because there was like a Hell and a Lucifer and all of these things in the DC universe.
Right.
I can't remember the writer, but I talked about it last time, didn't I?
Yeah, you had mentioned it before about how someone wanted to do a different story with Lucifer.
Yeah, and he ended up we ended up getting this.
Yeah, this is preferable.
Yeah. But, I mean, Neil Gaiman was really starting to carry weight at this point, and he was like the artistic series, and, you know, they were starting to let him do these things. I mean, this is a story that affected continuity, and there were, like, spinoff series that other people took the ball and ran with. You know, yeah. The whole Lucifer series picked up some years after, and... You know, there's a lot written about that. He was still, I think, figuring a lot of things out. Like, when you see the later issues, I think he was able to figure out his writing and his end of the deal a lot quicker, and was able to take more direction, or able to direct the overall arc a little bit better. He was able to get the resources that he wanted. And wasn't just like, okay, well, Drenchenberg's going to do this, and this guy's going to do this, and, you know, they're just sort of giving him an artist to fill an issue.
Yeah.
And later, he's like, this is the guy that I want, this is the gal that I want, she's going to do 12 issues, he's going to do 6 issues, you know, I'm the boss of this. I think that he just carried more weight, and he was better at, you know, giving it a cohesive look.
Because you had talked about, you know, the whole first series of issues, a lot of them had that EC Comics feel.
Yeah.
And it kind of comes back a little bit in a couple of these issues.
Yeah.
It's not, consistently it doesn't. I mean, there's most of these issues don't generally have that feel, yes. But some of them do. And it's just weird, like, the art direction changes the overall theme and feel of the art throughout the book. It moves a lot and changes a lot, and that doesn't happen a lot in kind of anymore in this kind of story. Mm-hmm. Like an ongoing Vertigo title right now, The Wake, which, you know, Snyder and Murphy, and that's all it's going to have. It's going to have one artist do everything.
Well, I think that the whole Vertigo model
was built on Sandman.
Absolutely, it was.
Yeah,
I mean. The Sandman was like the flagship project that spun off the whole Vertigo line.
Right.
And it's really the later Sandmans. And I love saying Sandmans.
Sandmans.
It's really the later Sandmans. Maybe even starting with this one. Starting with number 4.
Mm-hmm.
Because number 4 is really the one that starts shaping the whole rest of the series.
Right.
Hmm.
Well, what's something we can, you know, keep an eye on as we read more and more?
Right.
I certainly, that's why I kind of brought it up, because
No, absolutely.
I think the changes and see how if it, you know, mm-hmm. how the structure of the art and if there's a consistency or inconsistency.
I think they were figuring a lot of things out when they're doing this, you know.
Yeah.
They were I won't say creating a market, but they were really discovering that there's a whole kind of person out there that would read a book like this, and, you know, they want, like, a cohesive look to it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
They want all the issues of the art to be consistent. I mean, I think it was just a pretty typical thing at the time for just to have artists flip in and out.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's not like in the 50s and 60s where, like, 3 dudes were drawing 900 everything. Books a month.
Anything else you want to bring up?
I don't know. That's a pretty thorough discussion.
Yeah. I think we hit a lot of good points. I certainly enjoyed it. I think the fourth arc is my favorite so far.
It's one of the standout issues from the series, and it sets into motion a lot of things that you don't see until the end. It's like I said, it's what got me reading comics again.
Right. Yeah, but that's Sandman Volumes 3 and 4, Dream Country and Season of Mists. Next week we will be doing 5 and 6.
5 is A Game of You, and then there's Fables and Reflections.
So read along as we go on this journey through the Sandmans. Some really interesting stuff. we're talking about. And lastly, this week, Eric's favorite segment. I pulled him on this, and I think it's his favorite every time.
Yeah, in no way do I want to hang myself after we do these.
Hear that, folks? That is a ringing endorsement. In no way does he want to hang himself.
Yep, not killing myself.
He's not want to kill himself for this segment. So you know it's one he likes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
This is time for the Brian Lee O'Malley tweet quiz, in which I plumb the depths of Brian Lee O'Malley's Twitter feed, write down three of which he wrote, then write one of my own, mix them up, and quiz Eric, see if he can figure out which one is mine. Are you ready, Eric?
I think so.
Because I got some doozies for you.
Ugh.
You say that now, you haven't heard them yet.
I hate doozies. You better get going.
Okay. First one. Lieutenant Commander Data, more like Lieutenant Commander Date Me, number two. Captain Jean-Luc Picard, more like Jean-Luc Penis in the Butt. Number three, Jonathan Frakes, more like Jonathan Frake Geek Girl. Nothing? You didn't get anything out of that one?
Say it again.
Jonathan Frakes, more like Jonathan Frake Geek Girl.
Jesus.
Enjoyed that.
Fuck.
Or maybe I wrote it.
You enjoyed writing it.
Maybe. Lastly, I got an air purifier and now I'm really mad at all the other unpure air outside my room.
I think you're playing a game here with me.
I am. Okay, for our listeners and for Eric's benefit, I'm going to read them all one more time. Number one, Lieutenant Commander Data, more like Lieutenant Commander Date Me. Number two, Captain Jean-Luc Picard, more like Jean-Luc Penis in the Butt. Number three, Jonathan Frakes, more like Jonathan Frake Geek Girl. And number four, I got an air purifier, now I'm really mad at all the other unpure air outside my room. And I am playing a game mm-hmm. with you, Eric.
It's pretty clear. You're playing fucking mind games this time. I think you're trying to do some misdirection here. Or are you?
I don't know.
It's unclear.
Did I plant one of the three yeah. Star Trek ones? Or did I write the non-Star Trek
one? I honestly think that you planted one of the Star Trek ones. I think that's the game you're playing. Yeah.
Is it? Then which one is it, then?
I want to say that you wrote... Oh, God. It's a little tough. All these sound... I honestly feel like this is a complete trick, and he wrote all of these. I don't know.
You have to make a choice.
There, I know I do, and I'm winding up to
okay.
it.
Okay. All right.
But, yes, since you drew a dong on the back of my car the other day, I'm going to go with penis in the butt is the one that you did.
Is that your final answer?
That is my final answer.
Ding, 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 ding. You are correct.
Holy shit. I won your mind game.
You did. I thought I was being a little too obvious with that one, but it made you laugh, so it's good. That's all.
No, it fits in pretty well with the other ones. I struggled with that one a lot, but it's exactly in his character to just do one of these things and then just start naming a whole bunch of dumb shit that sounds just like it. So, he very plausibly could have wrote all of those.
I really wish he had written just three Star Trek mm-hmm. ones, mm-hmm. and then I could have just planted a fourth Star Trek one.
Yeah.
But he didn't.
Oh, well.
I wanted to write two fake ones. Make your job a little bit easier. You have a 50-50 shot.
I know. But that wouldn't be fair for everyone listening.
No, it wouldn't. So, Eric, he's right. He got one right. That's two correct he's got. He's gotten two out of eight.
So I'm statistically dead on.
Exactly.
So there we go.
See, it's the odds are ever in your favor.
The odds are ever statistically dead on. Yeah.
Yeah. So, folks, with that, this episode comes to a close.
Aww.
Oh, I know. Don't worry. We'll have another one next week and another one after that, another one after that. We are stalwarts. We do not skip weeks like some of these other podcasts.
Yeah, I think that was actually my intention when we first started. It was like, yeah, we'll do it about every third week. That has not happened yet.
30 straight weeks, all right? We have not missed an episode yet.
Yep.
Marathon men, that's what you can call us.
Iron. I insist people call me
we
that.
We are made of iron.
Mm-hmm. Some parts of us more than others.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Hear that, folks? Eric is available.
That was a hearty laugh there.
So, that was episode 30. And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Find all our stuff there, all our podcasts. I'm going to post a link to our contest for a Hawkeye hardcover there. You can email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. You can mail us comments, questions, suggestions, hate mail, anything you want.
I love hate mail.
Hate mail is good. You can follow us.
We should do like Richard Dawkins and read hate mail by the fireplace.
If we ever get any. Everyone loves us, so it's really hard to read it when
we ever get it. It's really hard to hate us.
Yes. We are also on Facebook, facebook.com/HandsomeBoysComicsHour. Like us there. We are on Twitter, HBCHour. We are on the Tumblr, handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. And we, of course, are on iTunes. Search for us at Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Subscribe to us. Leave us a nice review. It gets us more listeners. We like more listeners. We want as many as possible. We want to take over the entire world.
I didn't say that.
I didn't mean that at all. All you government officials listening in, we do not want to take over the entire world.
I would say they're not listening, but they are definitely listening.
Okay. You can find me at Twitter on Mixmaster Cheryl. It's MixmasterCereal. You can also find me at Tumblr with the same name. Eric, where can they find you and your stuff online?
You can get my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com. You can check out many of the other things I get up to online at ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet me at Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR. Bad example.
So, ladies, now you know where to get your date requests. Just go straight. Mm-hmm. MR bad example.
Yep.
Yep.
I'll get all your sexts right to my pocket.
Right. See that? Ooh. It's not the only thing in his pocket.
Oh, Robbie.
Until next time, folks. Have a good one.
My heart belongs to you, Robbie.
Oh, good.
Rock and roll.
Good God.